Let me bring in our hypnotist, Marshall Silver.
It's Marshall Silver, ladies and gentlemen, the world's fastest hypnotist.
It is a glorious day filled with love, health, opportunity, and potential. So glad you are with me. Hey, you know, this show's live. Unlike the other stuff you see, it's live, which means anything can happen, absolutely anything. And I'm sure today is no exception. I trust you had an awesome weekend. I hope your DeMaio didn't sink. I hope you had fun and laughed and spent time with friends and family and all the good stuff. We're about to get launched off today. I ran into an old friend of mine, a friend from high school, actually, and I hadn't seen her in years. And I was, it was interesting to me because she had these drawn on eyebrows that some ladies wear, except hers were really high. And, you know, I told her I thought they were a little bit high and she looked surprised. Then I told her about my plastic surgeon friend who hung himself or the cannibal who passed his brother on the road. Anyway, let's get started with the show. I'm excited to be here today. Lots of laughs, lots of fun. Keep up already. Today, our guest is a gentleman named Nick Comodina. Nick Comodina. And Nick is a visionary who blends spirituality with leadership to elevate coaches into conscious leaders. Nick's unique approach focuses on deepening the spiritual and ethical foundations of leadership, ensuring that business practices not only drive success, but also foster positive culture and personal growth. So whether you're a coach looking to expand your influence, a business leader seeking to incorporate more meaningful practices into your operations, or simply interested in the intersection of spirituality and business, Nick's insights will offer a fresh perspective on achievement and holistic success. So a nice big Marshall Silver welcome to our guest today, Nick Comodina. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, what's up, Marshall? Thanks so much for having me, man. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I see your vibe board behind you. We like vibe boards.
Yeah. I love the vibe board, baby. Got to write it down.
Yeah, it's magic. It's a great way to communicate, and communication equals wealth. Where are you calling in from?
I'm in Austin, Texas.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, Texas is one of those states that we took a hard look at back in 2020 when we were thinking about getting out of Nevada and getting out of California. So how long have you been in Texas?
I moved here in May of last year. So this is my year anniversary of being here. I originally am from San Diego. I lived in San Diego pretty much my whole life. And I lived in Houston for 2 years and I lived in Oregon for 6 months and then ended up here.
Yeah, the Oregon for 6 months makes sense to me.
Yeah, it was too long.
It's a long time. It's a different kind of place. And no offense to anybody living there. It's beautiful, except it's beautiful like Michigan is beautiful. It's beautiful and a lot of work. It's just the weather is not your friend there. That
the
is
weather
for sure.
Is not your friend. Yeah, it was a season.
Yeah, it is. Sure. And I think it's important for people to experiment. For my 17th anniversary this past year, my wife and I went to with the family, we took the kids up to Fairbanks, Alaska. To watch the Northern Lights. And while the Northern Lights were astounding and everybody should experience them once in their lifetime at least, 55 degrees below zero, it doesn't make any sense.
That ain't it for me. Nope. No thanks.
I like the heat. So talk to me. Tell our audience. Obviously, one of the things I was excited about having you on the show is I don't talk about it a lot. I'm not a fan of religion, except I love God deeply. And there's zero doubt in my mind that there is a God, we have higher powers. And so I just want to, find out, how did you end up on this particular path? You could have coached anything, but you decided to coach conscious leadership. Tell me how you got there and what it means.
Well, Marshall, it is quite the story. I'll try to spark notes it for the sake of time. but I grew up in a trailer park with a single mother. That was my upbringing. My father walked out when I was about 2 years old. And so I grew up with just very different conditioning in the world. I grew up, was raised mostly by women and never had that masculine leadership. I didn't understand what it meant to be masculine or what that even looked like. So I started watching anime and movies, and specifically Dragon Ball Z was my favorite anime growing up. And in the show, there's this sub main character, Vegeta, and he's this very arrogant, cocky, sarcastic, aggressive man. And so me growing up watching that, he was my favorite character. And so I started believing, okay, the way that a man shows up as a man is he puts people down. He's very arrogant. He's braggadocious. He's powerful. And when people fear him, that's how he stays safe. And that was really how I approached relationships for a very long time. I also had to do a lot of work in my more recent years, just unpacking accidental programming that our parents give us, you know, learning that a man is really only valuable if he's producing income for his family. So I always had this overwork stature when it came to my business as a way to show my partner that I loved them. And that led me through a bunch of different paths. But my real first hit into entrepreneurship was a gym that I opened. And it wasn't because I was this great leader or this entrepreneur who wanted to change the world. It was because me and a few trainers had a really awful boss at another gym. He fired us all and everybody looked to me for the answer for some reason. And so it was just out of necessity. And I did that, moved away from that about 3.5 years later, went online fitness coaching full time. And this is where my life really started getting awful. And because I didn't have faith in anything. I was more so, and I had faith in the universe, but I was like the fake spiritual. You know, I was the, well, if you talk about being spiritual, then that means everything that you do is righteous. So I was using it as a way to bypass actually doing any inner work whatsoever on myself by just saying I believe in the universe. So what had happened is, as a byproduct of me never working on myself and me deriving my worth from external things in this world, I recognized that I was building my entire life from a place of lack, from a place of feeling unworthy of love. And so by nature, I attracted partners that reflected back to me that. And I found myself in Houston in a huge house with my girlfriend at the time, buying supercars, making millions of dollars a year, and was empty. And she was being unfaithful with two of my best friends at the time. And it all finally came to this massive head where everything crumbled all at once. And because my identity had been so caught up in that reality, once that reality went away, I didn't know who I was. And when we don't know who we are, that feels like death. And when we feel like we're experiencing a death, sometimes our mind thinks it'd be better if we died. So the night that that all happened, I found myself in my backyard at 3 a.m. with a gun to my head, ready to pull the trigger. And as I started squeezing that trigger, I heard somebody behind me say, "No." And it startled me, shook me awake, and I turned around to look, and nobody was there. And it freaked me out. So I went back to bed. I ended up moving back to San Diego, and I got invited to this all men's church retreat from three different people. Marshall, three different people texted me at the same time. I'm not a religious person. Nobody thinks that I'm a churchgoer. And I went, okay, I'm going to go. So I go to this all men's church retreat from an amazing church in San Diego called Awaken Church. And we're in this tent. And the pastor says, "Put your hands in the air. The Holy Spirit is here. I can feel him." And, you know, I'm like, okay, right, man. I put my hands up and I close my eyes and I said, "God, if you're real, I really, really need to know right now." And right as I was asking that, somebody tugged on my arm behind me and turned me around. And when my whole body moved, and when I looked, nobody was behind me. And I got chills. Just went all the way up my spine. And I went, okay. And I closed my eyes and I said, "Well, then why? Why did you just put me through all of that? Why did I just lose everything? Why did I just have a, why, God? And he just said very, very firmly to me, because you weren't paying attention. And I went, okay. And he just kind of communicated to me in that moment that, hey, like I've been trying to get you out of that situation and to see what you're meant to do. And you're just not listening. So I had to flip things upside down. And what I'm asking you to do, the path I'm asking you to walk right now, you can't do that without the unconditional love of a father. So I need you to prioritize a relationship with me so I can walk with you now. And so when he said that, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know if it was going to work out. And that's where faith is, right? Faith is uncertainty.
Of course.
So I walked away from my entire business and I sat with myself for 4 months. And it was, I would do the work that I needed to, and I would go sit on the beach in San Diego and I would journal and meditate and cry and connect with God and just allow everything from my past to finally catch up so I could sit with it and heal it and learn from it and integrate it and reflect on it. And through that stillness, I really found my connection with God, and it opened up all of these doors. It's like a veil lifted from my eyes, and I started seeing the world a little bit differently. And I started realizing, okay, a lot of people get into entrepreneurship from the wrong space. They get into it from a space of serving themselves and not serving the world. And you can build, you can get rich that way, but you will never be wealthy that way. So what I had on paper, I was rich, but I was the poorest person that I knew. So what I started recognizing was, I need to help people not make the same mistakes that I did. I need to bring back the consciousness and the humanity and servant leadership into the entrepreneurship market, because, you know, the way that we're going, it's everybody's gravitating more towards sales tactics and hacks and how to get somebody to, how to charge people the most amount of money. And that's, we're kind of losing the art of entrepreneurship, the art of finding out who you are and what your purpose is and what are you really providing to the world to make it a better place. And
well, isn't that it? I mean, isn't that it?
That is
the question. The question is ultimately, who were you on the day that you were born? Mm. And I think that's the biggest challenge for most people, is just like what you described, is they take their cues as children from all the people around them. And the majority of the population has very dysfunctional upbringings. Mm-hmm. You know, and I too was raised by a single mom. We were dirt poor. The house had no running water, no electricity, no phone, wow, and no father figures there. And so it was very challenging for me too. And I think anybody that grows up with a single parent, men or women, because my wife had the opposite experience. She grew up without a mother there. So her father raised her. There was no mother there. So she had no example of what a woman is in a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so one of the things that I believe is that when you figure out who you are, not what you're supposed to do, it's who you are. That's the question, isn't it? Is that when you figure out who you are at a core level, what you do is obvious. And absolutely, you know, my times of hell, when my life was the worst it could be, when my wife is having an affair with both the pastor and the counselor, and then eventually with the judge overseeing our divorce, my girlfriend is cheating on me and robbing me. My best friend who's running my company is robbing me, embezzling me blind, and the government's threatening to throw me in prison. The only thing that stopped me from putting a gun in my mouth or stepping off a cliff was the fact that I had helped too many other people. And I knew that if I made a stupid decision like that, it would impact every one of their lives. My thought that kept me alive was, if people see Marshall Silver deal with this, they'll give themselves permission to not deal with it too. And, you know, that voice you heard when you were sitting there and there was no one in the room, and then all those random people inviting you to church when everybody knows you're not a church going person. Clearly, obviously, and I know you know this, that's God. Mm-hmm. So what do you say to people like me? And I don't, you know, we haven't really talked about this for you, who I'm not religious. I am actually probably the opposite of religious. I don't care for what I have seen religion stand for, yet my love and devotion to God is so deep and so profound. I don't care about that. In my own opinion is however God shows up for people, as long as they're joy-filled, as long as they're happy, as long as it's the truth and they're not harming somebody else, I support that 100%. If they can find that peace, because I think that's the biggest challenge is religion, in my experience, is hypnosis. It is, you know, if my Buddhist friends are not burning in hell because they were born in China or some part of the world where, you know, Christianity isn't prevalent. No more than my Catholic friends are more blessed than my Baptist or Protestant or, you know, Episcopalian. And again, you know, I am of the belief that a higher power is clear. And I always think about, I ponder this when I'm meditating or praying, that God probably laughs at us as human beings a lot, partly because that's the easiest way to deal with things, but also partly because we get confused about the dumbest things and we put weight on the most insane of things rather than really paying attention to what's real. So what are you a religious man?
No.
So you love it. Did I kind of describe you when I was describing that?
Sort of.
So tell me more.
So my views are, you know, I think there's a difference. There's this three step pillar that people go through, whereas I don't believe, I believe, I know. Right. So and a belief, right? I believe there's not a God. Okay. That's I don't believe in God, but the I don't believe is a belief that God doesn't exist. And so beliefs don't just disappear. They have to change. There has to be new information that alchemizes that belief into something different. Beliefs don't just stop happening. So I didn't believe in God. And then something happened that changed that into I believe in God. And now that belief has been reinforced so much that I no longer need belief. I just know God. So there is no belief for me anymore. I don't believe that there's water in my water bottle. I know it's in there, even though I can't see it. I can't see the water that's in this right now, but I know it's there. That's how I feel with God now. But when we actually look at different religions or why religion is bad in the first place, is religion is basically saying, my way is right, your way is wrong. That's really, if we boil it down without trying to, you know, hyper-analyze and try to catch me in something that's wrong, like the main concept is that. And I think what we all need to recognize is that God is consciousness. God consciousness is what we're all trying to tap into. So when we can have this relationship with God, what we're doing is we're tapping into the deepest parts of our consciousness that God has put in all of us. And so now the question becomes, and this is even in the Bible, God created us in his image, which means we have the power of the creator in us. We are all tapped into the same God consciousness. And this is where we talk about going from 3D to 5D. Right? A human climbing the consciousness spectrum, getting into enlightenment would put them in the five-dimensional reality from a conscious standpoint. And by definition, they're experiencing heaven on earth. They are God. So can we actually take that ideology and say, well, then all of us are God, just experiencing himself. And so if God is unconditional love, well, unconditional love also can't exist without conditions in which we learn to love ourselves through. So when people say, how could there be a God when there's all this hate in the world, when there's all this terror, when there's all this death? Well, that would be a really interesting condition to learn to love yourself through if I was God, which I am. And so when people say, I don't believe in God because there's so much evil in the world, that's the same concept as saying, I don't believe in my parents because I got into a car crash. Your parents created you, that they don't control you. They can raise you up to a certain point, but after that point, everything else becomes your own choice. You have free will from your parents. Your free will from God is no different. So when people say, I can't believe in God because of all the bad in the world, it's like, well, then you can't believe in humans. Really? And humans exist whether you want to believe it or not. And so there's this... For me, my perspective is that we are all just God experiencing himself. We all have that same God consciousness. I don't need a religion to tap into something that's already inside of me. Religion is very constricting. Here's the rules. Here's how you show up, and then God will bless you. Versus spirituality is more expansive of, I am connecting with God. And when I tap into my God consciousness, by definition, I am the walking embodiment of God. And so consciously, I will not lie. I will not cheat. I will not steal. I will not harm. I will freely give, because when I'm tapped into that consciousness, that's abundance. I have an endless amount of energy, love, and resources to constantly give into the world. So that's my ideation of God and religion.
What do you think is the reason that most people blindly follow religion? You know, that's the thing that I think, and I'm often boggled by what I see people do in the name of their religion. Mm-hmm. And I think to myself, if you have a doctrine that literally says kill people that don't believe what you believe in, which some of the religious doctrines clearly do, and some very popular religious doctrines clearly do, what do you think about people that it doesn't seem like they're thinking? They're just blindly following whatever their religious doctrine or dogma or charismatic leadership tells them.
Well, it's a really good question. And I think there's a lot of layers to that. So I will just try to answer a more broad spectrum layer to it, which is majority of people on this planet are unconscious. And so when we're unconscious, we look at things that we have created a story around from an authoritative standpoint to tell us what to do. And so we see this psychologically. Somebody's in hospital scrubs. Instantly, there's this social status of raising them up. They must be an intellectual. They must be very smart. They're a doctor, a policeman in uniform, a politician, a pastor. So when we go to these things where we're trying to do right by us, because by definition, unconscious, we're on the lowest level of the consciousness spectrum. And that's where we have fear, guilt, shame, apathy. So when people are in fear, they don't think for themselves. They're thinking for survival. So they're going, tell me what to do. When we're in a state of panic and fear, we don't think for ourselves. When we're unconscious, we don't think for ourselves. So we need other people to think for us. And when we're in that paradigm, fear is like oxygen for us. So when I go to religion and I'm getting told, if I don't act this way, God's not going to love me. I have to act this way and do right. There's fear there. When I look at the news and they're telling me about COVID and they're telling me about wars and they're telling me about the new medicine or the new this, I am now constantly in a state of fear. And I'm going, God, I hope the government tells me what to do, because I don't know what to do. So we see this everywhere in the world right now. And I think that just in this conversation for the church, if we're having everybody tell us what to do over here, it would just make sense that we want everybody to tell us what to do over there as well.
Where do you get filled up? Do you meditate? Do you read? Where do you get filled up? Obviously the benefits of religion is you've got a structured source to go and get replenished. My wife, she goes to church. She and the kids like church. I'm not a fan again. And I think they belong to an amazing church. I love the pastors. They're personal friends, and I really like everything about them. It's just not my cup of tea. I have a challenge with it. Mm-hmm. Where do you go to get filled up?
Well, I will say, I go to Red Rocks Church here in Austin. They're amazing. When I was in San Diego, Awakened Church, in my opinion, is the best church in the world. I mean,
they've got a cool church in North County. I don't know which one you went to.
I went to the one in Balboa.
Yeah, they've got a new church up by the 78. Used to be an Ashley's furniture store, and a big, beautiful place. And they did a tremendous job renovating it. We saw the show Twisted, the Scrooge story set to 80s music. It was awesome. If anybody gets a chance to see it next year when it comes back, Twisted, the Scrooge backstory with 80s music. So it was really cool. So you do have a church that you go to.
Yeah.
And while you go to get.
How I fill myself up. I have a daily meditation practice. I practice breath work every single week. That to me is a very big energetic cleansing. I do have like my other tools that I use for meditation. I'm a regular user of Hape or Rape, whoever people want to idealize or call that. It's based on the tribe. But
what is that?
It's like a sacred ground up tobacco to like blanket statement. It's like a sacred ground up tobacco from Indian tribes that they use to help meditate. You administer it by blowing it up your nose, and it really grounds you and just brings you into this really deep meditative state. And it does a lot for just cleansing energy. You know, I work with so many people every day. And so it's really easy to take on other people's energies while you're in conversations and stuff. So that's just kind of one of my spiritual hygiene things that I do.
And so then, what did you call it? I'd never heard of it before. So it's kind of like a snuff.
Sure. Yeah. You would search it as either Hape or Rape, H-A-P-E or R-A-P-E, which is I usually say Hape because when you spell the other one, people kind of look at you a little weird. But yeah, it's a great practice. And I love utilizing that. And then for me, it's just finding that 10 to 15 minutes a day where I'm in stillness. And when I mean stillness, I mean, I'm not intentionally trying to meditate. I'm trying to find complete stillness where I'm fully present and just listening for anything God wants to tell me. Because we find God in stillness. We don't find God in chaos. We don't find God anywhere else but stillness. And I think that that's where a lot of people are so disconnected, because we're not still at all. We're constantly on our phones. We're constantly in a city. Like, very rarely do we put our phones away and just go sit outside for 10 minutes. There's panic that induces when we do that now. And that should show everybody how disconnected we really are.
What are if you were to describe something, obviously you go to Red Rock Church. I'm guessing it's a Christian church.
Non-denominational Christian church, yes.
Got it, which is ironic and kind of a oxymoron. Even though you're going to the church, what I like about church, I like community, mm-hmm. like singing. I like laughing. I love hanging out with people. I like knowing what expected behaviors there are. Even, you know, I like knowing that if I am in a parameter. But my belief is that we obviously don't need a Bible or a doctrine or even a God to tell us what good behavior is. You know, and I think that that's the biggest challenge that people have, is that they are consistently seeking guidance outside. And I don't even think it's guidance. I think it's validation for their bad behavior.
Sure.
They want to know, oh, God will forgive me if I do this. Well, how about you don't do it then if you think you're going to need forgiveness? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times people will do the most horrific of things in the name of their doctrine. You know, I'm speaking up because, you know, it's the right thing to do. Jesus would have me do this. There's mm-hmm. an author. I don't know if you're familiar with Neil Walsh, the Conversations with God books.
Okay. I know of the books. I have not read the books, though.
I'd highly recommend them. And the first one in particular, I think the second two were good sequels for the sake of selling more books. But I think the first one, which is often the case, you know, an author writes something and they don't know how it's going to be received. And then when it's well received, they say, oh, I got to write more of this. But the book was written as if Neil was receiving what's mm-hmm. called automatic writing. You know, he sat down and he had a pen in his hand and his hand just started moving and it wrote this book. And while I find that to be a load of balderdash, the fact is the book's good. It's mm-hmm. a good book. And I think it's a good book for helping people understand. And one of the principles of the book is that if it's of God, it's of three things. It's of truth. It's not a gray area. It's not subjective. It comes from a place of joy, meaning it makes you feel good. And then finally, it's from a position of love, an expansion rather than a contraction in faith-based. What are your thoughts? How would you, if you were to describe a God to somebody, how would you describe God?
That's an interesting question. I think that, well, one, I actually have a different perspective on the truth aspect of that, where like if the truth, it's like making you feel good, because sometimes the truth does not make us feel good. And it has to be delivered with love, otherwise the truth doesn't work. And so I think a lot of times, I get this a lot with entrepreneurs I work with, where they're like, well, if it doesn't feel good, then it's not in alignment for me. And I'm like, well, that's why you're stuck, because you think everything has to feel good in order for it to be true. And sometimes things can suck and also be true that you need to get done and do. But so anyways, back to the question, how do I describe God to somebody? And I think I really would basically describe one's intuition to them, because that is God. That is our God consciousness. And kind of like I explained earlier, God is a consciousness that we all can tap into. So that voice inside of your head when you do something that you know is in alignment and it lights you up, and all of a sudden, and everybody's experienced this, when we do something that feels in alignment with our integrity, when we set a boundary, when we dismiss a client that's not fulfilling us, and we start tapping into what is the right thing to do right now, then we start walking by that, all these synchronicities start to happen. All these new clients come out of the woodwork. Somebody calls you that you haven't talked to in forever. Every light screen. That right there, that's God. That's God. That's God conscious. God's flowing through you. And God is abundance. God is unconditional love. So when I am practicing generosity and unconditional love, by definition, the universe sends me an abundance of money, an abundance of resources, because God is give. The same hand that gives is the same hand that receives. So as long as my hands are always up like this and I'm always giving to the world, I'm always going to somehow miraculously have everything that I need in order to do so. That's God.
And if somebody is feeling particularly lost, you know, like you were on the day that you had the gun in your hand and you were ready to just end it, I'm done. Well, where do you tell them to go? What do they do?
In. I tell them to go inward.
And how do I do that?
Yep, absolutely. It's a great question. Most of the times we convince ourselves we have some sort of story for why we can't find stillness. I need to be working, otherwise I'm stressed out. I always need to be doing something. And it's like, no, you are just afraid to meet parts of yourself. That's it. And the second that you sit down and you're not distracted, all of these voices that you've tried to shove down start coming back up. And that's where we start having chaos
You're good.
There we go. So do you have, I'm assuming at your home, you have what most people call a junk drawer.
Yes. Oh no, I don't have a junk drawer. I got a old junk house.
Are you familiar with the concept of a junk drawer?
Yes. I was teasing. Yes. I have a junk drawer.
Okay. So
everybody does.
Most people, and there's always that like bundle of cords in there, right? There's always like 17 cords that are just jumbled, and you pick it up every day and you're like, today's the day I get this thing done. And then you just look at the whole thing and you're like, screw that. And you put it back in and you close it. That's what happens with our mind. And so a lot of times there's so much chaos and we're trying to run from it. And whenever I feel an emotion, when I feel lost, when I feel like I'm experiencing death, when I feel like I don't want to be seen because there's shame and guilt, whenever I feel an emotion and I try to distract myself from that, what I'm actually doing is abandoning myself. You're abandoning yourself because we have all these different parts of us. We have our ego, we have our subconscious, we have our unconscious, we have our inner child. We have all of these things, these concepts of self that live inside of us. So I imagine it like this. A six-year-old comes up to you and says, I feel really unsafe right now. I don't feel like I'm loved by anybody. And you go, shut up. I'm on Instagram right now. You would never treat a child that way, but that's how we treat ourselves. So how we find stillness, how we get ourselves unlost, is we actually sit with that bundle of cords. No matter how overwhelming it feels, no matter how much we convince ourselves that it's trying to hurt us or that something bad's going to happen, we sit with that bundle of cords long enough to figure out where the first one starts and ends, where the second one starts and ends. And all we have to do is make sure that all these cords go to the place that they want to go to in our mind and in our heart with patience. It's that patience and curiosity. And when we can do that, when we can stop thinking that all of this chaos or anxiety or depression is negative or something that needs to be fixed with a pill, really it's just fixed with stillness. And there's you know, again, there's more depth to it than that we're not going to be able to go to on this. Most people are always avoiding, which is why the pill is the easy thing to do. But most people who take antidepressants are still depressed. Most people that take anti-anxiety meds still have anxiety. So it would make sense that those aren't the fix. The fix is actually meeting that emotion and sitting with it. And the thing that you can do for an actionable takeaway with anybody is, let's just say right now you're experiencing anxiety as you're listening to this. And what I would do is I would have you close your eyes. And if you focus on that anxiety and really pinpoint where it is in your body right now, where do I feel anxiety? Okay, so for me, and I know this of myself, so for me, I'll close my eyes and say, okay, I feel anxiety in my chest. That's where I feel the most anxiety. And it's not my whole chest. It's maybe like the center of my chest. It's kind of in a circle and it's hot. So now I've really understood physiologically where my anxiety is. And just by me doing that, I no longer am the anxiety. I have pinpointed where the anxiety is. And so now my goal with somebody is to close their eyes, focus on that, and take 3 to 5 super deep conscious breaths and let that anxiety actually expand, get hotter, get bigger. And we really work them up. And while they're doing this, they're reciting the mantra to themselves, I am completely here with you right now. I am completely here with you right now. I am completely here with you right now. And when that emotion is at its all-time high, we ask the emotional body, okay, I feel you, I see you. Now show me where I felt this first. Where was the first time I felt this exact emotion? More oftentimes than not, you're going to get taken back to a memory. This happens. And I know you're a hypnotherapist, I believe.
Yeah, you're describing regression therapy, right?
Yeah, regression therapy, fragmentation, whatever you want to call it.
You're describing timeline therapies.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're talking about an initial sensitizing event.
Yes. And so we find that. And then what we can do is we can basically insert ourselves in that memory and reparent ourselves in the moment. And then the question really is, what does that version of me need to hear right now? Do they really just need to hear, I love you and I'm sorry that I abandoned you here and I'm never going to leave you again? And more oftentimes than not, when somebody starts saying those things out loud to themselves, I mean, oh my God, it's this huge emotional release. And they are, you know, usually sobbing in some way, shape, or form. And I try to explain to them, I'm like, this isn't actually even you crying. This is you finally giving the space for that child to be heard and let their emotions out because you're holding them. And in that moment, there's so much energy that moves, energy that gets released from the body. And now all of a sudden, where all this chaos and stuck energy and anxiety was, is gone. And someone feels 30 pounds lighter. And we can do that every day to ourselves.
And do you think that that process is a process, once again, of just getting out of your head? Just not let the tapes run and the hamster wheel go nonstop, and just say to yourself, I'm going to focus externally. And again, I use the phrase, get out of your life, get into theirs. You know, during the time of my life, when I felt like every night I would go to bed and I would pray to God to take me during my sleep. I would say, please take me during my sleep, only because I figured that that was a respectful way out. And I mean, who could blame me if I died in my sleep? Wasn't my fault. Mm. But then every morning I would wake up. And when I would realize I was waking up, the first sound out of my mouth was bang, because I was so disappointed God hadn't taken me in my sleep. Mm. And the only time during the lowest portion of my life that I felt any peace was when I was on stage. And when I was on stage and I was able to focus on other people, solve their challenges, quit thinking about, no matter what was going on for me, no matter how bad it was, when I was on stage, it wasn't about me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that that was an epiphany for me to get any suffering I'm going through probably isn't even about me. It's about me being a better version of me so I can show up better for my wife and my children, my students and the people that I care about. Mm-hmm. And when I think, you know, when people stop and ask, what's the lesson here? We have less anguish. We have less angst. We just say, okay, you know, I my wife, when we met, asked me if I ever thought I'd want to be married again, because she knew I'd been married twice. And I said, oh no, that's not for me. I'm not the marrying type. I realize that now. And she said, okay. And didn't give me any grief, was just the perfect wife regardless. And then one day I realized that it wasn't marriage I was opposed to, it was divorce. And that I had met somebody that I was never going to experience divorce with, that it was going to be somebody that, you know, I could experience what marriage really was with. Yeah. And we had a big family get together yesterday, lots of my siblings and their spouses and my nephew and his wife. And all I could think about was how easy my life is with my wife and how I would have completely missed out on this had I not just surrendered, mm-hmm. which is a very powerful word inside of our spirituality, surrendered.
It's tattooed on my neck.
Yep. It's that, that's what it is. Cause I believe that that's God. I believe that God is Satori, and Satori is surrender and being present. And that if you're not present, especially in times of angst or turmoil or challenge, if you're not present, you won't learn the lesson, and you'll be destined to learn the lesson and have to be back in that moment again until you're present. Yeah. You know, if I walk down the street, like in your, you know, metaphor, I walk down the street and I'm Pollyanna, I'm not worried about anything happening, and somebody jumps out of a alley and jumps me, mugs me. If the next time I walk down the street, I'm the same Pollyanna idiot, then guess what? I'm going to get mugged again. And I'm going to keep getting mugged till I realize, oh, if I don't pay attention and look a little more fierce, I'm going to get attacked. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the thing for people, is they just don't learn their lessons. They keep coming back to the same thing again and again.
Well, I think, and so I agree with you. And the thing that I want to add is most people will go through a hardship. And I believe our souls, we have contracts. I believe we choose our childhood as a soul. I believe we choose the tumultuous things that we go through up to a certain age, because that's what we need to heal from to help humanity. And so what most people do, though, is they experience a hardship and they don't want to let that go, because they want everybody to validate them in their hardship first. And that's why we keep reliving. That's why we keep ourselves stuck. We're going, I don't want to change, because I want people to give me sympathy first. You have to acknowledge how bad I have it before I'm willing to change, because I don't know how to get any sort of validation without that. And so it's like, was your experience not enough? Why do you need me to tell you that you're in pain? You already know you're in pain. You already know that it hurt. Why do you need me to do that for you? And that's really the massive question of, am I keeping myself in these situations because I want sympathy?
There's one of the great poets of our time, George Michael, said something, I just can't explain. Something in me needs this pain. And, you know, when I'm experiencing pain, I just say, what is it here to teach me? What am I supposed to do differently? I just had treatments on both my knees, and they told me it would take about a month for them to heal and for me to get back to normal. And yesterday I was in pretty specific pain, except it's the vision and the belief and the certainty that in 3 weeks or so, I'll start feeling better in my knees. Right. You know, the stem cell procedure will start taking. And I believe that's what faith is. I believe faith is follow through. That when I have faith that something's going to turn out well, I just keep going. And when I have no faith, you know, if I keep eating these things that I'm not fond of, and I keep doing this exercise that I don't like, that, you know, it's never going to work anyway, I don't do it. Except when I see a result, I say, okay, it's working. I'm going to learn to like this food. I'm going to find a way to enjoy this kind of motion. Mm-hmm. And I often ask people, what if how you lived your life naturally, meaning don't do anything you don't want to do, only do what you want to do, only eat what you want to eat, only move like you want to move, only interact with who you want to interact with, only do activities that you love. How great will it be when those things produce the life that you want? So, you know, I my children, we homeschool the kids and we use child-led learning. They learn all about what they need to, all the basics of reading and arithmetic and composition and all those things, except we are heavy on creativity because my own belief is creativity unlocks every portion of your brain. And my belief is creativity unlocks logic, that, you know, a creative mind can find the logical solution because they're creative, where a logical mind is often stuck. Mm-hmm. So as far as right brain, left brain goes, I really impress upon my children, you want to focus on music and magic and content, video creation and communication. And also, you know, how do you speak to yourself? How do you strengthen that conversation? And it just makes for different people. Mm-hmm. What do you, before we wrap up the interview, what do you do for fun? What do you do for creative releases?
Well, I actually produce music. That's one of my favorite things to do, is creating that. I also DJ, so I'll go play shows and stuff with my music, which is very, very fun. I fight. I've been a huge student of mixed martial arts for about 7-8 years now. I love Muay Thai. It's a very good physical, like masculine embodiment practice for me. It's been very healing. And honestly, I know it sounds cliche, but I genuinely enjoy working. Like that's one of my things that I actually like to do. I like getting on calls. I like hosting live events for my students like that. I like speaking, writing. I have a book that's in the final stages of publishing right now. It'll be my first book that I've published, and it's called Surrender, funny enough. Yeah. But those are all things that I just really, really enjoy, is any sort of creative outlet that is more, and I, you know, by definition, more of that creative energy is more feminine. And so the feminine energy is really what fills us up creatively. So it's like trying to get myself out of the hyper masculine and going into things that allow more flow and creativity and fun. That's what's going to fill us up that way. So I look for, and like music creation is just one of those things to me that is just so, so fulfilling and fills my cup up so much outside of seeing my friends and just going to dinners with them and stuff. That's a huge one for me as well.
Awesome, man. Hey, before we wrap up, first and foremost, how do people get a hold of you?
Sure. I dominantly use Instagram for my socials. And it's right there on the screen. Look at that. It's just my first and last name.
My producer's awesome.
I'm the only Nick Comodino on the planet. So it's impossible to not find me.
Awesome. And any last thing you want to teach people? Any last thing you want to say before we wrap up?
Sure. I mean, I think just kind of tying conscious leadership into my final message is when we take the time to be still and figure out who we are and what we actually want to fix in the world, not from a place of fear, more from a place of love. And I think anger and love can exist at the same time. So we have to find what makes us angry in the current state of the world that we want to change from a place of love. And I think when you can match those two together, your success is a non-negotiable, because it's a mandation to further the evolution of humanity. And so that's what I do with people.
Awesome, brother. Hey, you're a joy. I love your energy. I love having you on the show. I appreciate you very much. And, you know, we love live events. That's my thing too. As a performer, yeah. I've been on stage since I was 7, and I love teaching. Do not get me wrong, except I love teaching in person. Mm-hmm. There's nothing I like too. Better than watching the reaction of the people around me. It's the performer in me. It's the teacher in me. I just love watching that reaction.
Absolutely.
So thanks so much for being on the show. You are amazing. God bless. And I look forward to meeting you in person, either at one of our live events that you're always welcome at, or maybe even one of yours.
Thanks, Marshall.
I take care. I'm Marshall Silver, your personal millionaire maker. You are totally loved. We're having lots of fun. I look forward to seeing you very soon. Maybe even on tomorrow's show. Until we chat, make it an awesome day. Bye for now.